So this is the second in a series of six webinars, which we're calling Agriculture at the Table, Bringing Agriculture to the Table, Extracting and Storing Carbon. And the underlying reason that we're doing this is that my name is Jan Storm. I'm a member of our CCL Agriculture Action Team. We've been working for a long time to try to have conversations and build relationships with farmers and other agricultural stakeholders because we share, or we feel like we should share, the common goal of achieving a livable, sustainable planet. But we're having a little bit of a challenge in figuring out how to maintain a conversation about putting a price on carbon. So what we figured out was that we needed to inform ourselves a little bit more so that we could listen better. So that's why we're wanting to listen to some stakeholders in this webinar series and also actually learn the content so that really learn the language, because we find that we aren't knowledgeable enough to speak the same language. And so that's what we're doing with these webinars. And I don't see Kelly. Kelly is not on the line. Is that correct?
I see Kelly Lively.
Oh, great.
Her camera's pointed up a little bit and she's unmuted.
Okay. Great. So in just a minute, we're going to introduce our speaker for tonight, Alyssa Charney from the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. But I'm going to ask Kelly to do that. In the meantime, as you listen, please feel free to go ahead and put in the, if you're on Zoom and you're on the computer, to put in the chat area any question that comes to you while Liz is talking that you might like to raise when she gets done. And also, if you're only in by audio or you're calling in, at the close of Alyssa's remarks, you can also hit *6 to unmute yourself and go ahead and ask a question. So that worked really well last time. I hope we have a lot of discussion. I think that's all for right now. So I'd like to turn it over to Kim.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really great to get to chat with you all and hopefully keep this conversation going. In terms of shared priorities on climate change as we look towards the next Farm Bill. So to get us started, the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, we are a grassroots alliance of over 100 member organizations from all over the country working together to improve federal food and farm policy for nearly 30 years. So just to kind of give you a sense of where our member organizations are located throughout the country, these are the groups, the grassroots groups working on food, ag, environmental issues at the state and local level. They are spread throughout the entire country, as you can see, not in every single state, but in the majority of states, we have either represented members who are voting members as part of our policy council that shape the direction we take, as well as participating members who are actively involved in our policy setting process as well. So this just kind of gives you a sense of where our members are spread throughout the country. And then how we work. We, starting from the left of this screen, we absolutely start with the farmers and stakeholders. So these are the folks who are on the ground, out on the farm, really experiencing what are the challenges that they face when it comes to agriculture and when it comes to the federal policies and programs that are intended to support them. And so from there, they share that feedback with our member organizations who are at that state and local level to really get an understanding of what is working and what is not working. And they bring those experiences, that feedback to NSAC, to us in BC. And from there, NSAC, we are a staff of about 15 individuals, primarily based here in DC, And we work through our member organizations, through that feedback that they provide to us from on the ground, to really set our priorities for sustainable food and farm policy for the year ahead. We bring our members together twice a year to do this process. In the winter, we set our priorities for the year, and then in the summer, we evaluate those priorities and see where we have been thus far and what we need to do next. And the final step in kind of how NSAC works is that the policy team here in DC engages directly with Congress and with federal agencies like USDA to articulate those asks. So we are representing those grassroots voices, bringing them to the table for these agriculture policy discussions to ensure that their voices are heard. So just a bit of kind of big picture overview of what we talk about when we talk about the Farm Bill. It is a very large piece of legislation that is reauthorized approximately every 5 years. I say approximately because it can take multiple years to actually get the Farm Bill reauthorized. And it is important because it governs a very significant array of federal farm, food, forestry, and rural policies and programs. And it is under the joint jurisdiction of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees. So when we think about members of Congress who are the ones kind of driving the ship, writing the legislation, those are the committees that we are focused in on. So just to give us kind of a big picture overview of what was in the 2014 Farm Bill, that was the last Farm Bill that was authorized in 2014. It is set to expire on September 30th, 2018. And as you can see from the wide range of titles in here, that's how the Farm Bill is broken up. Everything from commodities and conservation, trade, nutrition, credit, rural development, the list goes on and on. And when we think about, at least from NSAC's perspective, when we think about the role of climate change and implications in terms of federal Farm Bill policy, it is embedded within the majority of these titles. So we really see that as an opportunity to have a significant impact on climate change, both mitigation and adaptation through the Farm Bill. Just to give us another kind of big picture sense of what is all the money when we talk about the nearly $500 billion that were in the last Farm Bill. As you can see, and as you probably know, 80% of that funding is going to the nutrition title, so going to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or food stamps. And it's really this smaller section of the pie, the 20%, that we are talking about when we're talking about conservation or crop insurance or research dollars, a lot fit within that other section as well. So just important to keep in mind when we're considering kind of the big picture of Farm Bill policy and how it moves. That is also one of kind of the frameworks that is a big part of this discussion. And I think especially in the last Farm Bill, there was a push to separate the nutrition part of the Farm Bill from all of the farm programs. This failed when the House attempted to do it, very much because what really drives the Farm Bill and makes it possible is alignment between urban constituencies who are primarily the bigger part of interest for them is the nutrition title with more rural districts. So the importance of keeping those two parts of the Farm Bill together is critical. Even when we as NSAC are focused on that other small percent, we absolutely recognize that in order for the Farm Bill to move, we need to keep those nutrition and the farm pieces together as one bill. So just to dig in to a couple of the specific areas that have a lot at stake when it comes to climate change mitigation and adaptation, specifically from the perspective of the Farm Bill proposals that NSAC will be putting forward, I wanted to touch on a couple of areas: conservation, research, energy, and risk mitigation or crop insurance. In terms of where NSAC is in our Farm Bill process, we are getting very close to releasing our full Farm Bill platform. We have set a date now that I believe is the third week of October. So this is a 100-plus page document of all of our policy priorities for the next Farm Bill. So definitely urge folks to stay in touch, and we'll be sure y'all can see that when it is released. And the way that we do our work is through issue committees that are focused in on a specific set of issues. So I staff our Conservation, Energy, and Environment Committee. Within that, we have a climate change subcommittee. So it's a lot of those members and groups that provided feedback to ensure that all of the many different angles that we approach the Farm Bill are represented in our platform. So I want to start with the bucket that is very probably rises to the top when it comes to opportunities for climate change mitigation and adaptation in the next Farm Bill. This is the conservation title, which is Title II of the Farm Bill. And so here I have split it up into a couple of different buckets of programs that fit within that title, all of which we really approach from the angle of soil health. So when I talk about soil health, I really just mean the ability of the soil to function well, to cycle nutrients, to store water, and to produce food. And these programs or policies all really present a lot when it comes to soil health, and specifically when it comes to carbon sequestration and the ability of the soil to store carbon. So the first big bucket of conservation programs are working lands conservation programs. These are federal conservation programs that support farmers and ranchers to adopt conservation on their land. The key here is that they are keeping that land in agricultural production, so simultaneously adopting key conservation practices while also producing profitable food, fuel, and fiber. So the two main programs are the Conservation Stewardship Program, CSP, and the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, EQIP. The Conservation Stewardship Program takes a whole farm approach, so you enroll your entire operation in the program and are rewarded comprehensively, not just for the new activities that you're going to adopt over the life of your five-year contract, but also for your baseline existing level of stewardship. We really see CSP as a critical component of what is in the Farm Bill for soil health and for carbon sequestration. There are practices including resource conserving crop rotations, soil health crop rotations, and tillage system management. A lot of these really high level activities that provide an enormous opportunity to be increasing carbon sequestration and improving the overall health of an operation. Farm Bill wise, this is a program that we are definitely concerned about as a target for cuts to it as we move forward. So we will be sure to keep an eye out for that and also proposing some opportunities to ensure that CSP is not only recognizing the crop benefits of soil health, but also livestock, so additional support for rotational grazing and additional practices. The other big working lands conservation program is the Environmental Quality Incentives Program, or EQIP. This provides cost share assistance for individual practices that a producer can adopt, so they get paid financial and technical assistance to adopt those practices on their land. Previously, under the last administration, EQIP was used for a specific climate change initiative, so a portion of that funding, a small portion, was set aside to specifically target practices that were beneficial in terms of climate change mitigation and adaptation. Moving forward, we do not see that as a top priority administratively, but we do see enormous opportunity to really shape both of these programs such that there is priority given to soil health and key practices that are benefiting soil health through these programs. So the next bucket of conservation programs is what we call land protection programs. This is either taking land out of production because it is extremely environmentally sensitive and highly erodible, or protecting wetlands, protecting some of that key acreage that provides enormous conservation benefits. There is the Conservation Reserve Program, which is taking that sensitive land out of production, and then the Agricultural Conservation Easement, which has both an agriculture land easement component as well as a wetland component, both of which can provide enormous opportunities when it comes to the ability to protect that land and protect its ability to sequester carbon. The key here when it comes to CRP and what we will be pushing for in the next Farm Bill is the opportunity for permanent easements. So CRP contracts are between 10 and 15 years, at which time that land comes out of the contract and a producer has to work to get it back in. Our opinion is for some of this most sensitive acreage that really is not suitable for farming, it makes more sense to be putting that into a permanent easement. So that's an area that we'll be pushing for, as well as some improvements to the grasslands initiative, which again is protecting grassland, pasture land, providing an opportunity for the dual benefits of protecting that grassland while also grazing it in a way that is sustainably sustainable management. And so I think as you kind of follow the Farm Bill debate moving forward, there will definitely be a clear tension between groups that are pushing for an increase to the Conservation Reserve Program. This is primarily coming from the wildlife and sportsman communities that want to see that acreage increased. It was decreased significantly in the last Farm Bill when crop prices were extremely high because folks wanted to take that land out of CRP, put it back into production. Now that prices are low, there is a drive to bring that acreage cap up above the 24 million acres that it is currently at, in order to take land out of production. This is essentially a driving factor when it comes to funding that is available for the Farm Bill, and the concern of many is as that increase comes to CRP, what does it mean for other conservation programs? So definitely a dynamic that I think will drive a lot of the conservation debate moving forward. And then the final bucket of conservation programs or provisions that I want to talk about are the Farm Program Conservation Requirements. So this is basically ensuring a basic level of conservation excuse me, when it comes to folks who are receiving farm benefit subsidies, whether that is crop insurance, whether that are those are loans or other conservation programs. So conservation compliance requires a highly erodible conservation plan if you are going to farm on highly erodible land. This, again, is important for protecting soil health and water quality as well. It was expanded in the last Farm Bill to be relinked back to crop insurance, so a major win that we will be looking to protect. And Sod Saver is a similar provision, but it is focused on native prairie or native sod, which, as you can imagine, has enormous benefits in terms of carbon storage and sequestration. Ensuring that you have that there is a penalty if you plow up that native sod. This was included in the last Farm Bill, but only for 6 states in the Prairie Pothole region. So this Farm Bill, we will be looking to extend that provision to all 50 states. Will definitely be an uphill battle in terms of some strong opposition, especially from on the committee, but a really important win when it comes to protecting native sod and the benefits that that grassland provides. So the next area that I want to touch on that definitely has a lot at stake when it comes to climate change is both this research bucket as well as opportunities to ensure that we are evaluating program outcomes through measurement and metrics. The first research program that I will touch on is the Sustainable Agriculture Research and Education Program, or SARE. This provides on-farm research that is really driven by farmers, which is essential when we're trying to figure out what types of practices and resources do we need to mitigate climate change, especially region-specific. So this puts farmers in the driver's seat to do that work and to get the data and information they need. Another bucket of relevant research programs are organic research. There is definitely a lot of benefit when it comes to climate in terms of organic production and the way that nutrients are managed and inputs minimized. The problem is often that there is a deficit in available research dollars to do this type of research. So a couple of key programs that make that possible: the Organic Agriculture Research and Extension Initiative, OREI. This is a big one that we'll be working on this farm bill to ensure that we have increased funding available for that program, as well as funding to focus in on organic transition. The next big bucket of funding and research dollars that are available is the Agriculture and Food Research Initiative, or AFRI. One piece that we'll be working on here is to ensure that when the projects that are focused on climate change are really rooted in what are the needs at the local level, what are some of those factors that are driving those decisions, and ensuring that there is priority and ranking given to those type of projects. And then finally, related to research and data, a big piece that we'll be pushing on that side that's related back to the conservation title as well, is ensuring that we have better measurement, evaluation, and reporting when it comes to the impact of these conservation programs. So right now, when we talk about programs like CSP and EQIP, USDA can tell us how many dollars were spent, how many contracts were obligated, how many acres were enrolled, but they can't tell us things like how many tons of nitrogen were kept out of the water, how much carbon was sequestered as a result of specific practices. So a big push that we're making is to ensure that USDA has the authority and also the funding to do that measurement evaluation, to get the metrics to really understand what is the impact of these programs. This will allow us to not only improve these programs, to ensure that they are doing their intended purpose well, but also to ensure that as people who are advocating for these programs, as taxpayers, we can defend the impact of these conservation programs in terms of the outcomes that they are intended to achieve. So I also want to touch on the energy title, because there is a lot in the farm bill, not just in terms of carbon sequestration and soil health, but also in terms of energy efficiency improvements, to really recognize that farmers have a key role and an opportunity to be efficiently using energy on their operations and integrating this in ways that are beneficial. The two big ones here for the Rural Energy for America program, or REAP, and the Biomass Crop Assistance Program, or BCAP. On REAP, one of the focus that we have is ensuring that these dollars are really focused, and the provision that used to be in place to allow grants to farmers or rural small businesses for feasibility studies can be reinstated, recognizing that, again, farmers play a key role in understanding what are the needs when it comes to energy utilization, and also redirecting those funds from blender pumps at gas stations to going back to the farm to where those dollars are most needed. And then on BCAP, focusing in on the establishment and production of perennials as a source of renewable energy. A lot of the focus of BCAP has gone towards the actual removal of the biomass, whereas we want to see that focus being the production of perennials such that we get those benefits when it comes to soil health and carbon sequestration. And so finally, I want to touch on the crop insurance piece of the puzzle. As of the last farm bill, which eliminated direct payments and kind of reshifted what we call the farm safety net, crop insurance is the largest part of that safety net, which means it really plays a driving role in how our food is produced and what are the types of practices and production systems that result from that structural design of the federal crop insurance program. So a couple of relevant opportunities and needs when it comes to crop insurance in the next farm bill. First, we want to ensure that crop insurance requirements don't stand as a barrier or they're not in conflict with the adoption of conservation practices. There have been some challenges with cover crop termination guidelines. Cover crops, as you know, are really important in terms of keeping that ground covered. And again, bringing carbon back into the soil, ensuring that the guidelines that the federal crop insurance program requires are not in conflict with NRCS conservation practices, and really ensuring that these two agencies, these two federal programs are better talking to each other. Additionally, on kind of that was a barrier that we want to overcome, and then an opportunity that we want to improve the program is have a better linkage between premium subsidies, which is how the government and taxpayer dollars are subsidizing crop insurance. We want to ensure that that is better linked to stewardship practices that provide critical climate benefits. We very much recognize that many of these practices are not only beneficial to the farmer in terms of climate change mitigation and kind of these at-large goals, but also in terms of adaptation, it is very much a risk mitigation strategy. So the argument here is that these conservation programs and practices are ultimately linked to the resiliency and to the risk factor of an operation, so should be very much reflected in how much a producer is subsidized for their crop insurance. And related to both of these, we recognize that there is a lot of data that is still necessary to really do a better job of integrating conservation practices into the federal crop insurance system. This will require a lot of data collection and ensuring that we have the information we need and that the risk management agency has the information they need. We very much understand the risk mitigation benefits of these conservation practices, but they need the data. They want to understand how it's all working. So we want that push to also be a part of the next farm bill. So just to kind of give us a quick overview of where we are in this process and how we expect things to be moving forward. As I mentioned, the agriculture committees are the committees of Congress that are responsible for writing the next farm bill. They will each have their own draft bill that they release to the committee and they mark up. We really don't know the timing on when this could happen. This says that estimated to begin in early spring 2018. It could very well be earlier than this. The House Agriculture Committee in particular has been saying that they are on a very accelerated timeline and could essentially release their initial draft anytime between now and February. I think most folks in DC would be quite surprised if we were to see anything from either chamber before early next year. But we know they're working, they are taking ideas, they are trying to get to a place where they can release a bill and then bring it to the floor of the House and Senate to pass it out. So while it begins with the agriculture committees, it will eventually, each bill will make its way to the full House and the full Senate, thus giving members who are not on the agriculture committees an opportunity to not only vote on the bill, but also to offer amendments if there are things that they want to change from the draft that has been started. From there, the House and Senate will have to negotiate the differences between their two bills. We definitely expect that there will be significant differences between the bill that the House produces and the bill that the Senate produces. And from there, they will have to bring it to the floor to try and get it through Congress. This could happen as early as late summer or early fall. Again, as I mentioned, the Farm Bill has to be reauthorized if they do not want it to expire, if they don't need an extension by September 30th, 2018. And then from there, as you know, it not only needs Congress's approval, but also the president's approval. In previous Farm Bills, the administration itself has been involved in this process to varying degrees. They will essentially have someone at the table from USDA who is involved in negotiations and the development of what the next policy looks like moving forward. So opportunities to take action, kind of how we know that this whole big process is moving right now, but how can we as citizens get involved and weigh in as these things move forward? One way to really support active legislation is what we call a marker bill. These are bills that are introduced in Congress in the year or so leading up to the omnibus piece of legislation being passed. That are actually be passed into law, but rather to set a mark and put out some ideas and proposals that members of Congress want to see included in the actual mark that the committee writes. This is a really effective way to get ideas out there and to get support from both other members of Congress who can sign on and co-sponsor those bills, as well as from constituents, from stakeholders who can start to be engaged in what the Farm Bill process looks like moving forward. So NSAC is working on several key marker bills that we hope will be part of that Farm Bill discussion moving forward. Just last week, we had two bills introduced that we worked with our champions in Congress to get introduced as marker bills. One was a local food bill, and the other was a sod saver bill. So going back to that provision to extend sod saver nationwide, over the next couple weeks and months, we hope to see additional bills introduced that will put forward many of these conservation priorities for the next Farm Bill out into a space where members can support, organizations can support, folks can weigh in to really recognize the benefits of these opportunities. And so we already talked through this piece a bit in terms of who is at the table. And I think, you know, the key point here and the key reminder is that there are advocacy groups and plenty of industry lobbyists who are weighing in, providing their ideas, and we want to ensure that grassroots voices also have a seat at that table as we move forward in the Farm Bill process. I just have this up here to give us a sense of what the membership of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees look like. The stars are where the chairs and ranking members of those committees are, and showing their party affiliation. This is the House Agriculture Committee. This is what it looks like when we look at the entire country and we look at both committees. So really important in terms of recognizing if you are in one of those states where you have a House or a Senate member on the Ag Committee, you can play a significant role in weighing in with that office, whether it is through visiting, doing field visits. I know that you all had a great visit recently with Congressman Faso, as well as just calling the office, you know, sharing whether it's a specific bill that you want that member of Congress to be supporting or a specific set of priorities. These are the states where right now those folks are actively working to write the next Farm Bill. So with that, I would love to open it up for questions and discussion. And I think would definitely encourage folks to stay in touch. Here's some information in terms of our website to kind of stay up to speed. We have a blog where we are regularly providing updates and information as the Farm Bill process moves forward. And as I mentioned, later this month, we'll be releasing our full platform. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Wow. That's a lot of information. There's a lot of chatter, but I wanted to, just before that, I wanted to ask you, I wanted to step way back and ask if you could, comment on, you mentioned the farmers and stakeholders, as well as the member groups that make up NSAC. And I wondered if you can comment generally, so of all of those programs you described, in which many of them you said focus on climate mitigation, adaptation, and carbon sequestration in particular, when you hear from your stakeholders and member groups, how do they talk about climate? Do they talk about climate risk? Do they talk about future generations? Do they talk about wanting to get credit for, or some kind of monetary benefit for taking some kind of action?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And one that we've been having a lot over the past year, very much recognizing that the results of the election has an impact on national dialogue around climate and how we talk about it. The kind of result of that shift from our members was that, you know, we recognize in certain political situations, it is beneficial to be talking about the economic benefits of climate change mitigation and adaptation, or talk about it in terms of soil health and yield. I would say it's kind of the combination of those two in terms of natural resource benefits plus the yield and productivity benefits that's the package that they are most talking about. Mm-hmm. And there's also a really strong emphasis on resilience. So what mm-hmm. can these practices and programs do to ensure that we are building resilient systems that thus can withstand the types of changes and extreme weather that we know farmers and ranchers are going to have to be dealing with across the country.
So thanks. And just one more. Hopefully you're aware that what CCL does is we advocate to put a price on carbon emissions, which will obviously reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And so I'm imagining a lot of the climate parts of the things that you described also focus on or result in a reduction of greenhouse gas emissions also. Mm-hmm. But what the farmers can do, of course, is they can extract the carbon out of the air. So I'm asking if you see any overlap or in any of the policies that are priorities for NSAC in those two objectives. Putting a price on emissions and paying a price maybe for carbon extraction.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that we have been talking about. We haven't directly engaged on carbon markets. We have a set of principles in terms of kind of what would it take for a system to be one that we could support. But I think we absolutely do see the overlap. I think that, you know, that in terms of some of these conservation programs that I'm talking about, even though, you know, the structure of the payments and the way that the programs work is not actually directly paying the farmers for sequestering carbon, in our mind, that is very much part of the benefits that come from those practices. So even though it is not a formal, we are paying you for X amount of carbon that your system is sequestering, we very much see it as the at-large benefits that you are being paid for and incentivized to adopt these practices that's a big part of kind of what is at stake and what we think that farmers should be rewarded and incentivized for doing. So I think, you know, we recognize that there's a long way to go, but I think a lot of these programs definitely start that discussion and start moving us in the right direction to be able to actually incentivize the carbon and climate benefits that these type of systems provide.